and welcome to a special non-conference summary edition of the Gopher Gridiron Radio podcast. I'm Luke Buer.
And I'm GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we thought that, well, since there's a bye week, people are going to be yearning for a little bit more Gopher football talk. There's not enough of it on these airwaves in the Minneapolis era, just in Golden Gopher country in general. So while we have Derek Burns back from assignment, we figured it's probably a good time to just recap the non-conference for everybody.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And it's especially interesting, you know, given that there has been a change in staffs. I think it's interesting to go from, you know, having a one staff that recruited a bunch of players and a new staff that inherits a bunch of players. And then, you know, one staff might have a certain scheme and the other might not. And what I find always fascinating, we talk about this a lot, is do you fit the scheme to the players or the players to the scheme, right? And I think that PJ Fleck and his staff are in an interesting position. And I'm just curious, Derek, let's start with you. You know, obviously Fleck came and has inherited a program with players that for the most part he didn't recruit. And do you feel like, I mean, there's obviously been changes, but, you know, how has he fit the scheme to his players, or do you think it's been more so they fit the players to the scheme?
Well, I think the coaching staff has a base scheme that they want to run on offense and defense. You know, on the offensive side, they want to run a certain block, you know, run blocking scheme, and then the passing game, you know, their route trees and progressions, I think are going to be, that's what they want to run. So they have to, you know, teach that to the players. But within those schemes, the plays that they're calling, the formations they're using, and the personnel, I think, are bent a little bit to the talent that they have. So when we talked last time about, you know, on the running side, they want to run a zone, inside zone blocking. So inside zone running game, and where they might want to run more zone read, they may not. We'll see as the time and the seasons go on. One adjustment or one thing they've done with Connor Rota at quarterback is run the inside zone blocking schemes with out of one or two tight end personnel, and they're not read optioning the defensive end. So that's something where they've adjusted the scheme, or at least the blocking within the scheme, to the players that they have. So it's been fun. I'm a little bit biased. I'm a zone blocking guy. That's what I'm, you know, that's what we predominantly ran. And it's, I know the potential there. There's almost an infinite number of variations and things you can do to counter what the defense is doing. But, you know, that, I guess I would start by saying that has been a core change for this staff is they want to run an inside zone or zone blocking scheme. And so it'd be interesting to see, you know, as the weeks and games go by, to see all of the variations that can be run off that. We talked about how it's a change for the running backs because they're able to, make those reads on the play when they get the handoff right away. They have several holes and routes that they can check when they get the ball right away. It forces the defense to defend every gap. If they're not, the running back can exploit that. And then I think as we move forward, I would expect them to mix in an outside zone, either a stretch play, a pin and pull, not just jet sweep, but something out of, you know, from out of the backfield. And that will also help build upon the inside zone running scheme and help open up some of those lanes inside. So first and foremost, I think that's been a big change from the previous staff, which based their running out of a power running scheme.
All right. So if you look at this offense right now, the Gophers have run, let's say, it's just north of 200 plays. And right now they've really only ran, you know, they've really only attempted 58 passes out of roughly 200 plays. So about 25% of their attempts have been passing. And part of it might be the competition. But, you know, we saw during the Kill and Clay's era a significant bias towards running the ball. And I'm curious, just, you know, obviously from Western Michigan, we saw that PJ's stabs were really, you know, they actually went more of 50-50. And I'm curious, Ryan, to get your input on, do you think that's going to stick, or do you think that they're going to have to start throwing the ball here pretty soon?
Well, they're going to have to start throwing. And I think that it's more game script specific more than anything. Again, you look at the last two games, Minnesota has had 3-score leads in the second half for a majority of it. And then against Buffalo, they just decided that they weren't going to lose because of their offense, and so they went extremely vanilla. And I think that's the theme throughout the first three games is Minnesota's offenses, specifically in the second half, have been extremely vanilla. I mean, you've seen a lot of zone. You've seen a little bit of power. You haven't – I mean, again, we talked about it against Oregon State. They ran 35 plays in the second half on offense, and there were 33 run plays. And again, you look at the splits from Saturday, I think it was 47 to 18 in terms of run plays to pass plays. And yes, Minnesota wants to be a run team for the most part, but not to the quite of effect of 75 to 25. Again, I think it's probably going to get closer to 60-40 by the end of Big Ten play. But this staff also knows that their best players right now are running backs, and you're starting to see the lack of I shouldn't say talent at wide receiver, but the lack of talented wide receivers overall, because you've seen two wide receivers get more than 60% of the targets, and that's Tyler Johnson and Demetrius Douglas. Tyler Johnson has 12 catches for 282 yards. That's 23.5 per catch. Demetrius Douglas has 11 catches for 83 yards. That's 7 a catch. So two different uses for both of those. Obviously, Tyler Johnson being more of your field stretching kind of tight end, someone that Minnesota's hit off the post twice and has been able to take it to the house, where Demetrius is more your bubble screen kind of a guy. So it's going to be interesting to see how Minnesota is going to combat things, because Derek, I know you mentioned it to me, you've talked about it, and I talked about it today on Gopher Illustrated. What's going to happen come Big Ten play is you're going to see 7-man boxes, and you're going to see potentially 8-man boxes, and that's going to mean press man on the outside. It's going to mean cover 0 or cover 1 over the top. Now, on Tyler Johnson's two big plays this season, I believe one was cover 1, and then the one against Oregon State was cover 0. So there's no safety over the top, which means the wide receivers on the outside are going to have one-on-one matches. And the issue is, I don't know that Minnesota has a receiver that can go up and win the 50-50 balls. And that's been a theme here for like the last few years. I know that Derek, you and I, Luke, have talked about that last year numerous times, in terms of that's the exact same issue that this previous staff ran into, was they didn't have anybody that could win that 50-50 ball. Now, how are they going to mitigate that? We're going to have to find out. But I think one of the ways you do that is if Chris Ottman-Bell is healthy, he needs to play against Maryland, because it's very clear that Minnesota is searching for someone else to step up and help Tyler Johnson or help Demetrius Douglas. And there hasn't really been a passing game threat number three. And they're going to need a number three if they're going to win multiple Big Ten games. And so I think Ottman-Bell, what he showed during fall camp was the ability to go up and win those 50-50 balls. I mean, I saw him do it numerous occasions on the 6 practices the media was allowed at. And unfortunately, he came down with, I believe, a broken bone in his foot. I think he should be good to go come Maryland. And if he is, I would be very surprised if they don't burn the red shirt there. And have two true freshman wide receivers and a true sophomore there. Again, read into it what you will in terms of the amount of talent there, with their two receivers out of the three that they brought in playing right away. You can say some of it's, you know, PJ Wine to play his guys, but again, I mean, we've talked about it and harped upon it for the last 2 years. A lack of separation from receivers under the previous regime was glaring, and Tyler Johnson has been able to find that. So that is a long-winded answer, Luke, in trying to tell you that I think it's not going to be 75-25 like it's been. I think it's going to be closer to 60-40, because Minnesota's not going to abandon the run. They'd be silly to, with two tremendously talented running backs in Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks. And as PJ also mentioned in this press conference, you know, you have a pair and a spare, something that Glenn Mason, your guy, Derek, talked about. I mean, number three running back just went for 107-3, and I thought he looked pretty decent doing it. So they're not going to abandon the run, but they're going to need to have to find some things in the passing game, especially if Lingen's hurt. Derek, what have been your, you know, overall thoughts specifically on Minnesota's passing game thus far?
Yeah, the big changes for the wide receivers and for the tight ends and slot receivers for this staff. Previously, the previous staff generally ran everything to the sidelines. They oftentimes took the outside receivers, used them to run the safeties off, so ran them either down the field or down the middle of the field, and then behind that would run a tight end, a fullback, or running back on like a sideline routes, flood routes, things like that. They didn't really like to use the middle of the field, and I'm not sure, I guess I would, if I had to guess, they probably wanted to stay away from, you know, it was a risk averse way of running a passing game. They wanted to stay away from things like tip balls and throwing into traffic. And so everything was really pushed to the sideline. So where they did use the guys on the outside were things like hitches and out routes and timing routes to try and get off press coverage. But again, more often than not, they were using the outside receivers to push the secondary downfield, and then using Lingen and, you know, even back to the previous tight ends, Max Williams and the fullbacks, and run those guys out in the flat, you know, to underneath routes. What this staff has done, especially through the first couple of games, they saw a little bit different coverage against Middle Tennessee, but they do almost the opposite. They use the tight ends and drive those guys upfield, a lot of seam routes, run people through the slot, use the slot receiver, drive them through the middle of the field to push the safeties back, and then they'll take the outside receivers and bring them over the middle of the field on things like a dig route or crossing route. And that's what they scored a couple, you know, on the longer plays in the first couple of games were on those type of routes where they're really utilizing the middle of the field. I was happy to see that. I've kind of harped, you know, the last few years, I've been frustrated by the fact that they're not using the play action and going over the middle of the field. You typically, if that front seven, and especially if they're bringing a safety up on play action to defend the run, that's going to open up the middle of the field. And so it's a more standard, especially if you're throwing against a zone defense, the more standard NFL concept to bring up the front seven on play action and then throw underneath the safety and behind the linebackers in that pocket. And they've really done that a lot. So they've gotten more utilization on those outside guys, and Tyler Johnson's had a good year. As I mentioned, the route trees and the pass routes are almost totally different this year. And so, and I agree with you. Ultimately, it'll be interesting to see as play progresses here through the conference, when they see more press coverage on the outside, how they respond to that. In my opinion, it will result in them having to make a decision about throwing some 50-50 balls downfield to try and pull them out of that press coverage, or to try and pull a safety out of the box to bring an extra defender to bracket on the outside. So I've been really pleased actually with to see some of those new route combinations and to see them using the middle of the field. I think if they're going to have a strong running game and lead with that, I think that's your next progression in the passing game, is to take advantage of that.
All right. So we talked leading into this season, you know, there were a lot of holes that we didn't really know what to expect, but I think both Ryan, you and I probably lean that the Gopher staff or this Gopher team was going to have to, at some points lean on their offense, knowing that they had two really strong running backs, but they're just going to have to lean on their offense. And there were big question marks on defense, especially in the secondary coming into the season. But now that we're through three games on the non-conference, Ryan, do you change your answer? Do you think that this team is going to have to rely on their defense to pull out some games?
I do. And again, it's a change in what I thought was going to happen. And I think some of it is because I underestimated Rob Smith, and I look like a fool to do so thus far through three games, because again, we've talked about it now. This Gopher defense in the second half of three games has given up zero total points, 160 total yards. Like, I can't stress to you enough how impressive that is. And this is a unit as a whole that's getting off the field three fourths of the time on third down.
And that's in second half, so right? Those
stats. The first two were.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, just their third down, the way that they're able to get off the field and just force so many three and outs, again, they're able to keep themselves fresh, and you're able to put the offense back out there with a chance to score points. And so I underestimated what Rob Smith was going to be able to do, because you knew that Minnesota had the talent in the front seven to be very effective this year. Again, a lot of guys coming back, a lot of guys continuing to step up into roles, and we thought that the secondary was going to be an issue. Well, I think that safety is much improved, or I shouldn't say, I think safety is as good as it was last year. Again, you lose Demaryius Travis, you have Jacob Huff come in, Duke McGee is another year older, Antoine Winfield is another year older. I'm still interested to see how Chenault and Keandre step up. Again, Zoe Creighton has played a lot better than I thought he was going to, and he's made quite a bit of he's made a lot of strides in the positive direction. So, and then when you look at the offense, again, I thought that Demaryius Crofts was going to be leading this team, and now that we see that's probably not going to be the case for quite some time, if again. So how does the passing game continue to complement the running game? I mean, that's good. I feel like if we redid this podcast in September of 2016 compared to September of 2017, I feel like our answer would be pretty much the same. Again, the defense looks like it's going to have to carry the offense, even though I think the offense is doing more heavy lifting than they did last year. But again, the defense is still the one creating the bulk of the opportunities, making sure that the offense has a great field position, amongst other things. And so, Derek, what do you think? When we look at the Big Ten schedule coming up here again, Maryland, Purdue, Michigan State, and Illinois in October alone, when we get to the first week of November, do you think it's the Gopher defense or the Gopher offense that's the one that's carrying a majority of the load?
That's a good question. I think I agree with you on a couple points. I think that as we get into conference play, I think that the defense is going to, you're going to see probably more, a little more aggressiveness and some more variations on the defensive secondary. I think the way they've played it thus far, especially on the outside, is pretty conservative. They've given a lot of cushion. They've played conservatively on the outside. I think, you know, you've mentioned that they don't have a lot of depth there and don't have a lot of experience. So that's probably a reaction to that. On the other hand, they've played a lot more zone coverage in the secondary, which has allowed the safeties to help on the outside. It's allowed, even Winfield in the nickel position allowed him to move around quite a bit. And so I think they'll find a way to allow the safeties of the nickel to help those guys on the outside, because, conference play comes and they see some better quarterback play, especially they're going to target the outside. And if you give them a 6 or 7 or 8 yard pitch and catch, they're going to hit that until you respond. So we haven't seen yet, what they're going to do to respond to that, how they're going to respond. If they lock those guys up in press coverage, or if they play a trap on the outside, or, that's going to be interesting to see. I'm not trying to evade an answer, but I would say their front seven on defense is going to have to carry the team and probably carry the defense a little bit.
I think that's fair.
Yeah, and I think they can. I mean, that's probably where they have the most experience, and they've shown that so far. And if they can do that, they're in a good position. It's much, they're in a better position doing that and having to react outside and trying to scheme things from a coverage standpoint. If you're soft in the middle or inexperienced in the middle, and you have teams run all over you, you have no answer for that. I mean, you can try and overload the box. You can try to bring an extra guy in, but ultimately, if you can't stop the run, I mean, it's the oldest cliche probably in football, but if you can't stop the run and run the ball consistently, you can't control the flow of the game. So I think they'll rely on that front seven on defense to carry the defense a bit and perhaps carry the team, as they get into conference play.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the running game, maybe to tie up a little bit of the offense here. But, we saw the running game struggle kind of in the first, two games. They really didn't see the results that maybe that we expected given the horsepower they have in the backfield. And quite frankly, defensively, they're not going to face any easier foes when they go into conference play. They're going to play teams that, quite frankly, would probably have much bigger front seven. So, Ryan, what are we going to see the running game do to improve? How are they going to have to improve as they get into conference play?
Well, yeah, let's start with the offensive side of the ball. And again, I feel kind of silly talking about it with a former Big Ten, all lineman, as he is far more knowledgeable on offensive line play than I. But just this offensive line unit is going to have to keep coming together. And again, PJ talked about it after Buffalo that he thought that the offensive line was playing as five individuals and not one cohesive unit. And I would agree with that to an extent when you look at how they were playing against Buffalo. Again, they looked very unsure of themselves. They looked like they were playing with extremely high pad level, which they were. And whatever Ed Warner said against Oregon State, I think it worked. Again, I think that the running backs helped out things. But then I thought that the offensive line, again, took another step forward against Middle Tennessee. Again, we talked about it on the breakdown. Middle Tennessee had been stout against the run against Vanderbilt and against Syracuse, and then Minnesota comes in and basically runs it down their throats. And I thought that the guys on the interior, I thought that Connor Olsen continues to play well. He, as a redshirt freshman going from game one to game three, his progression is exciting to see. Seeing that Donnell Green at left tackle is probably Minnesota's best offensive lineman overall. And so just in terms of the running game overall, though, how does Minnesota continue to counter seven-man boxes, especially if they're just going to abandon read option with Connor Rota? Again, whether that's them not wanting to get him hurt because then it's the Seth Green era, and I'm not sure that I'm entirely ready for that. And so, you know, whether that's trying to mitigate the injury risk, whether that's thinking that this O-line unit up front is blocking zone well enough and then mixing in power, you know, thinking they can get away with that. Again, how do they continue to counter these seven-man boxes? Again, how much of it is going to be that jet motion? How much of it is going to be the bubble screen? Are they going to start to work in some hot routes if they see the corners cheating off the edge? Again, they have guys in space that if you get Tyler Johnson the ball or Demetrius Douglas the ball one-on-one, all it takes is one miss and he's off to the races. So I'm going to be the thing I'm probably most interested to see is how does Kirk Ciarrocca continue to scheme going forward? Because he knows that Maryland is going to be ready for this running game. He knows that they're going to put seven in the box. He knows that they're going to force Minnesota to pass on the outside. And we're going to have to see how Minnesota continues to progress with their offensive line in terms of the zone blocking scheme and how they continue to kind of work things. Again, Derek, you can correct me if I'm wrong too. Once we throw it over to you, but I think that Minnesota's double teams have been a lot better than they were in the first game. Again, these guys look more confident in terms of, okay, well, if we're going to zone right, you know, I'm going to continue to work this double team and we're going to see if anything crosses, I'm going to move up to the second level and grab it. Again, I think that that's been a good thing as well. And then in terms of on the defensive side of the ball, again, they've been extremely stout against the run. And again, they're giving up very little in the run game. Now, they haven't faced a power running scheme. They haven't faced a Wisconsin. They haven't faced, you know, these big offensive linemen that Iowa has either. The big test for Minnesota, and I don't even think we're going to find out against Maryland or Purdue, is going to be that Michigan State game. Is they're going to try and run it down your throat. Now, how does Minnesota mitigate that with their, you know, front seven is going to be the thing because Minnesota was able to do it last year with Jay Sobel. And it looks like Rob Smith has it figured out as well. But again, how does Carter Coughlin and Kamal Martin and Teyon Devers and Winston Dilaudy-Boudaire, Jerry Gibson, Nate Umlor, how do they stack up against these big running teams? I don't know that I have an answer for that. Again, I don't know what kind of schematic thing that Rob Smith's going to do because, again, we've seen a multitude of fronts again this year. We've seen just in the last two games alone, 2-4-5, 3-3-5, 4-3. We've seen a little bit of 3-4. Again, there's a multitude of things at his disposal. But Derek, I want to kick it over to you. What can Minnesota do in your eyes to improve on their running game? And then again, once they get against these bigger teams like a Michigan State, a Wisconsin, and an Iowa, how are they going to be able to stop the run because they don't have, you know, the big bodies at defensive end?
Yeah, so I think on the offensive side of the ball, they're going to, if you do, you know, just a little self-scout, I think the scheming against the Gophers is going to be to stop the run first and foremost. I mean, that's where their strength is. So they're going to, while they've progressed through the first couple of games, they're going to need to continue that. I think you hit the nail on the head when you talked about, you know, the progression of the offensive line thus far, I think is just building familiarity with the plays and the schemes and building off that. You know, one of our coaches I described it as, it's something that makes sense for me is, your three phases of an offensive line, you know, progressing is the first phase is knowing who you're going to block. That's your missed assignment thing. You don't want to miss any assignments. Pre-snap, you have to get the right calls. You have to, you know, diagnose the defenses and actually make the right blocking calls. The second progression is how you get that done. So the technique, familiarizing yourself with how defenses react and kind of executing on that. And the third phase is effort. And it's not that guys don't give effort or you have to learn to give effort, but you could only give full effort if you have full confidence and experience in what you're doing. And I think we saw in the first game, that offensive line was, they were really stuck on that second part. I don't think they had a lot of missed assignments, but they were just unfamiliar with, okay, how do I get this done? Like you mentioned on a double team or a combination, how long do I stay on this block? How long, you know, or they're too hesitant wanting to come off the block and not getting a push on the down lineman on the tackles. And I think that they've made a nice, progression over a couple games and in getting better at that. When teams scheme against them and they either add a guy in the box or move the front post snap, if they want to, they're going to be able to make it very difficult to run the ball. So how the Gophers can counter that is they can look at running zone out of different formations and different personnel. Defenses they're not always comfortable loading the box against every formation and personnel. So they might find out, okay, when we line up and, an 11 personnel with an H-back to the strong side, to the field side, they're going to load the box. But when we line up in two tight ends, balance formation, middle of the field, they're not going to load the box. And so you try and find out, that's why the coaches script plays at the beginning to see how the defenses are going to line up and react to each formation and personnel. So you can go through that search and find out, okay, we like our numbers when we line up with this personnel in this formation. And then you can go back and try and drive that and force the defense to make a change. But I do think defenses are going to try to scheme to stop their run. And beyond looking at how you block in the formations and the personnel, you can look at a couple things like you mentioned, throwing out of those loaded boxes with a bubble screen, a 50-50 ball down the field. I think if I had to guess, you'll probably see a big addition or a heavier focus towards play action or even mixing in an outside running scheme. They really haven't showed that so far. They've run a couple of jet plays. They've kind of stayed out of it because the defenses have brought edge pressure, and you really want to stay away from jet if you're seeing that. But that can be something they can look at, or they can bring in a pin and pull, an outside zone, a stretch play. And I think if they do that, that will help open up things a little bit on the inside, and provide them with a nice, a nice counter to that inside play. And then lastly, they could come back with a misdirection, something like a QB counter, regular counter, something like that. So there are different layers that they will add those as the game go, as the season progresses. But look for them to add, probably heavier play action if those defenses are going to scheme to stop their run. And then real quick, I just want to touch on, like, as you mentioned, on the other side of the ball, it is going to be interesting on the edges to see how they handle it. In the previous regime, how they handled things schematically was they used their defensive ends in a really wide technique. Now, things changed a little bit when they went to a 2-4-5 on this last year, but traditionally, they used a very wide defensive end technique, and they really use their safeties heavily in run support. So using that wide defensive end technique opened up things off tackle, so you had to bring your safeties up in order to try and stop teams from pushing things off tackle. They really haven't done that now. They're using their safeties in more zone coverage, letting those guys roam and read and react, which has benefited them. But I don't think we know yet, how teams are going to, or how the Gophers are going to attack if teams run with those power runs off tackle and run at sort of the lighter ends and how that goes. You're definitely going to see that from an Iowa and Wisconsin, a team that likes to run, zone and off tackle and stretch play. They're going to hit those things. So it's going to be fun to see how they react. I would imagine they're going to use some of their strengths, probably use a Duke McGee, use him in the box, use a Winfield in the box, I'm guessing. Against those heavier teams, and try to get those guys on run blitzes and provide some extra support.
All right, let's end this on the passing game for Minnesota's offense, Derek. Again, we haven't really seen a whole lot. Minnesota's only passed the ball 25% of the time. But the two things I think we know about this passing game in terms of a change from 2016 to 2017 is Kirk Ciarrocca's route tree is a lot more dynamic and a lot more creative than what we saw under Jay Johnson. I've been impressed with the different route combinations that he has shown through three games. And I think the crazy thing about it is we haven't even seen more than 25% of what he wants to get out there. Some of it's personnel dictated and some of it's game script dictated. I think Minnesota hasn't had to show their hand, so why show it if you want to save that for Maryland or Michigan State or Purdue? And then the other thing I think we know is that the pass protection has been elite to where I wonder if Kirk, you talk about, how does Minnesota try and, mitigate things in the running game? you know, mixing in play action. Well, if you're going to go deep play action, you have to have elite protection up front. And what we've seen through three games, again, hasn't exactly been a gauntlet of fantastic defenses in terms of creating pressure with Buffalo, Oregon State, and Middle Tennessee. But again, if you're an above average Big Ten offensive line in terms of in pass protection, that's exactly what you should do. So how, in your eyes, Derek, again, you and I talked about it, and you've talked about it on this podcast, and I think the one before it, you know, Minnesota is going to have to win press man, and they're going to have to figure out a way to get Tyler Johnson to win 50-50 balls. I think by my count, he's had three or four opportunities on fade balls or just go routes on the sidelines that Minnesota has thrown to him, and he hasn't been able to convert one of those opportunities yet. And again, that can't be the case. He's going to have to be able to converting at, you know, a minimum, like a 40% clip. Again, that's not asking the world from your wide receivers in terms of a 40% clip against 50-50 balls, but I don't know who else Minnesota throws it to, because again, I'm not expecting Rashad Still to be around anytime soon. I don't. And again, you have Demetrius Douglas, who's 5'11", 6 foot tall. Again, that's where I think Ottman Bell comes into play. So how does Minnesota's passing game, in your eyes, take the next step? And more importantly, what have you thought about Kirk Soraka's route tree thus far during non-conference play?
Well, it's definitely, as we've talked about previously, it's been nice to see them use the middle of the field with a lot of their route combinations. They're again, using an H-back or a tight end to stretch the field vertically and then run the outside receivers, the split receivers across the field on digs and crossing routes, and see them utilize that, which is nice. And then especially on play action, when you have that front seven committing to the run, it's going to open up the middle of the field more. So I expect them to continue to go back to that, but you're right. I think they will see more press coverage on the outside with Big Ten teams. And so options there include, you know, getting the tight end and the H-back, and even if they line someone up or an H-back in like the fullback position, getting them out in the flat behind the split receivers, getting them involved in the passing game is an opportunity. That's something we have seen in the past, and they could perhaps go back to that, where they're running off guys with that single coverage downfield on the outside, and behind that you're running, you know, a tight end or a running back out in the flat. I think they'll probably make an attempt to get the running backs out in the flat and, again, underneath that or behind that press coverage. They could also look at things like a wheel route would be nice. Have a fake to the running back, have him carry out the fake. And then if he is in man coverage against a linebacker, that's a mismatch. So sending the running back out in man coverage against a linebacker on a wheel route up the field would be an opportunity to throw it deep. It's going to be interesting to see. I think we've kind of honed in on, it'll be interesting to see what the appetite for this staff to throw downfield when they need to, and when they identify single coverage, be interesting to see how they handle that. I guess I'll just say my opinion on that maybe is a little different than most. I know most coaches like to be conservative. They don't like to throw a lot of those 50-50 balls because they're worried about an interception, but I guess I'm of the opinion, especially on, you know, maybe a long down and distance or a situation where you don't have as much to lose. I'm a proponent of doing that, pushing the ball downfield, because even if you don't get a completion, you have a good percent chance or a decent chance at picking up the pass interference. And the other thing is sometimes the defense reacts to that, even if it's not completed. So if they see that you're willing to step back on a play action, wait it out, you get the pass blocking, and, you know, throw the ball 50, 60 yards downfield against man coverage, it might make them think twice and say, wow, maybe, you know, but I was pretty close. We might want to take a safety and bracket that, or we might want to pull that press coverage off and keep things in front of us. That's my opinion. We'll see how they handle it. I think it's a good way to, I think you do need explosive gains, and, you know, developing consistency is the first part, but you're going to need playing some of these, you know, top tier Big Ten teams. You can't just run the ball efficiently and pass it efficiently. And you're going to need explosive gains. We talked in the past about having to, if those don't happen organically, you've got to dial some of those up and manufacture those, because you might be playing decent on offense, but perhaps you're playing another, you know, top 10, top five, Big Ten offense on the other side of the ball. They're making plays. They're putting up, you know, points just, you know, from playing well, maybe nothing your defense has done poorly. You've got to match that with some big plays on offense. So it'd be interesting to see what their appetite is for pushing those things and taking some risk and pushing the balls downfield when they have the opportunity to.
Yeah, I think the non-conference has been an interesting go, and I think we've learned a lot. I think there are still some holes in this team, probably in the spots that we suspected coming into the season. But you know, at the end of the day, they're 3-0. You know, you look at like Football Study Hall has them at 90% chance of being 6-6 or greater. You know, given you know what they lost from a player standpoint and what they've gone through in the last 18 months, I think that they're in a good position and they're positioning themselves to have a fairly successful season. So it should be an interesting Big Ten ride for sure. So I want to thank everybody again for listening. We appreciate it. You know, it's been really fun to do these, and your response has been great. So I would encourage you all to check out Ryan's work on Gopher Illustrated, especially during this bye week. A lot of great stuff will be there because the staff will be out recruiting in full force. Additionally, make sure on game days and game weekends you're checking out Derek Burns' stuff on Twitter. Again, Derek_S_Burns on Twitter. He does some great recaps, and I couldn't suggest it any more highly. So for Ryan, Luke, and Derek, we want to thank you for listening, and go Gophers.